chapter 16. We're going to look at verses 1 to 13 today. We are in a series called Taming the Money Monster. And really, it's about a subject that affects all of us, money. As I mentioned last week, there's not a person here that's not affected by the subject of money. You work for money. You write checks and see it disappear out of your bank account. When you go to Walmart, you don't walk in, the greeter says, "Hi, buy anything you want, it's for free." You'd like for them to say that, but they don't say that, do they? And so money is something that all of us need, and money is something that affects all of us. And we looked at last week a lot of different statistics that show us that money also has a negative effect on us. It's one of the main key factors in couples divorcing. One of the main key factors in family arguments. And it's an issue that affects each and every one of us. And so we're going to look for the next, well, today and for the next 3 weeks, continuing to look at this whole subject of money. And one of the factors that we're going to see in money, last week we saw the issue of responsibility, that you and I are responsible for how we handle our money, that we are accountable to God about how we handle our money. Today we're going to look at the issue of contentment. And so what I want you to notice is, you know, you have a little in your worship bulletin there. You'll notice on the back there's a fill-in-the-blank area there. You'll notice a little diagram at the top is that first factor that we looked at, responsibility. The second thing that we're going to look at is what we're going to focus on today is the whole issue of contentment. Because I'm going to be honest with you, contentment has a lot to do with money. Because if you're not content, you're never going to have enough money. If you're not content, you're never going to have enough money, because in order for you to be content, you've got to have money to buy the things that what? Quote, you think will make you content. And if you are not content, you're going to have some money issues. You're going to have money problems. And so we're going to talk about contentment. And so first thing I want you to notice is the contentment issue. There's three things I want to point out to you to help you and I understand what are we exactly talking about, this contentment thing. So the first thing I want you to notice is this. Contentment lies at the heart of our money issues. Contentment lies at the heart of our money issues. You say, really? How can you say that? Well, just think about our advertising. Whether it's billboards, whether it's TV commercials, all advertising is not just there to tell you about a product. All advertising, for those of you who are fishermen, are like that beautiful Rapala lure that just kind of has that little gold in it that attracts the fish that wants to just come and grab you. And then you eat that fish. Well, they eat you. They eat your money when they got you. And why? So advertisement kind of strikes at the heart of contentment. So like, for instance, we see this in our little kids all the time, don't we? We see this in our children. That, you know, they're doing fine in life. Then all of a sudden there's this show and there's this commercial for this new what? Toy. So before the show, they were content with what they had. Now because of this show and because of that commercial, guess what? They can't live what? Without it. Life won't be the same unless they what? Have it. Is that not what commercials do? Isn't that what commercials do? They kind of bring something to your attention that you never thought existed before, and they kind of tell you that little subtle thing, well, you can't exist without it. And so contentment lies at the heart of our money issues. I mean, I mentioned this last week, we have different generations here. And all of us have our houses, And in our houses, we're always, there's one part of our marriages that's always looking at the house, thinking about what needs to change. Does that exist in your house? Okay. What? Oh, yeah, okay. She's not here, Brad. You're okay. Okay. Everybody can relate, okay? You know, and in some ways, can I be honest with you? That's a sign of our times. Because the things that we do and the lack of contentment, you know, when you look back 100 years ago, you were just thankful you had a house. Let alone what the color of the wallpaper is. Or the carpet. Or the furniture. See, contentment lies at the heart of our money issues. The second thing I want you to notice about contentment is this. Our view of God impacts our contentment. How we view God impacts your contentment with what you have. See, if you have a low view of God, I'm going to be honest with you. If you have a low view of God, you're going to have a contentment issue. Because you might hear the promises of God where He says, I will provide your needs. I'll take care of you. You know, I will watch over you. Don't worry about how the food or the clothes you're going to wear. Consider the lilies of the field, how I dress them, and consider the birds of the air, and you know, who feeds them and everything. You know, all of those words of Jesus, if you have an understanding of that, it's going to be reflected in your contentment issue, because if you have a low view of God, you're going to be an uncontent person. And you're going to suddenly start thinking things like, God's holding out on me. Or God's moving too slow for me. And Lord, I know better than you what I need for my life. And what I need right now is this new truck. Not just any old truck, Lord, but that truck. With that color and those options. And Lord, that's what I need. You don't understand God. See, our view of God will impact what? Our contentment. It'll impact our contentment. It'll impact our contentment. The third thing I want you to notice about contentment issue is this. Contentment cannot be found in the world. No matter how much we try, you are not going to find contentment in the things of this world. The Chicago Tribune back in August 15, 1993 included this article. It's an interesting study. Money can't buy happiness, the article said. You probably heard the cliche in the mouths of old and wise. But even now, social scientists are saying that money doesn't buy happiness. According to the writers Ron Kulalik and John Van, an international study based on information gathered in 39 countries and published in the journal Social Indicators Research concluded that the more money people make, the more they want, so happiness keeps eluding them. The more money they make, the more they want, so happiness is never there for them. The study said neither increasing an income at an individual level or at a country level were accomplished by increases in subjective well-being. What is it saying? That even though somebody may see their individual level go up, income level, or a country may see the country's level go up, you don't see the same thing as far as their subjective, that is, their happiness going up. They're just as discontent as they were before, if not even more so. In fact, researchers found that rapid increases in wealth resulted in less, not more, happiness. So there you are trying to buy that ticket. If I just win that big one, it'll be okay. No, it won't. It won't. Ed Diener of the University of Illinois, a psychologist, said, a lot of people think if I only had $1 million, I'd be happy. It could be true for somebody, but for most of us, on average, it appears not to be true. See, contentment can't be found in this world. And see, that strikes at the heart of the money issue. And if we're going to understand how to tame this money monster, we're going to need to understand that not just that I have a responsibility, that I'm accountable for how I use my money. I also need to learn what? To be content. To be content. Now let me just stop for a moment. Some of you are thinking, well, boy, George, does that mean I'll never have anything? No. No, it's not saying that. Don't get me wrong, because some of you are saying, well, should I never want a new vehicle, or should I never want any of this? No, we're not saying that. But see, you could have something that's adequate now, and simply because you saw somebody else driving something that's better than yours, you could get discontent. And it affects us, doesn't it? It affects us. You know, I love computers. But I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, I don't go to the computer section of stores anymore. I will only go to them when mine dies. Why? Don't you want to know what's out there? Hey, I already know what's out there is better than what I got. But what happens is when I go and see, it causes discontent. Hey, that's what the whole premise of a mall is. You ever notice the stores in the mall? They all have windows in the mall. What do they need windows for in the mall? It's not going to rain in the mall. They're show windows. And they're there to what? Cause what? Discontentment. See, it does have a factor. So, okay, so George, what do we need to do? How do we need to look at this? So I want you to notice with me Luke 16. We're going to look at some lessons from an unjust servant who, through what he does wrong, Jesus gives us some instructions about the whole issue of contentment and really the whole issue of what our focus needs to be. Because I'll be honest with you, at the heart of the contentment issue is where our focus is. And it goes back to that second view, the wrong view of God. So I want you to notice with me the first 13 verses of Luke chapter 16. He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods or squandering his goods. So he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking away my stewardship, is taking the stewardship away from me, and I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of my stewardship, that I may that they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, 'Take your bill quickly, write, sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust true riches? And if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve God and mammon. So here's some lessons I want you to see. First of all, what's happening here? What's happening in this story? Jesus tells a story about this steward. This, actually, what he probably is a money manager. We all know what a money manager is. If you have something you want to invest, you have retirement or something, he kind of oversees the funds. So here's this rich man. He has a lot of money, and he has this money manager. And this money manager, this rich man finds out, is not doing his job. He's squandering his money. And so he calls this money manager to come and to give an account of his stewardship, of his responsibility over this money, and to fire him because he's not doing a good job. So this money manager is pretty shrewd, and so the Bible shares with us here that he sits back and he thinks about it and he says, what am I going to do? He says, I can't dig. That is, he won't do manual labor. You don't expect him to get a job at McDonald's. And he says, and I'm too proud to go around and beg. But he says, I've got a plan that's going to help me out. And you have to understand their culture a little bit, and I'll explain that in a little bit more. So what he does is he goes to everybody that owes this rich man money. Because again, he's the money manager, remember? And so he says to one of them, he says, how much do you owe my master? And the guy says, well, I owe your master 100 measures of wheat. Now that's a lot of money. And so he says, 100 measures of oil. And so he says, okay, here, let me see your contract. Let's tear that up. We'll write a new one. You now owe him only 50. He goes to the guy that has a, he says to him, how much do you owe my master? Now remember, he's the money manager. He can do this. And so he goes to the other guy, and the guy says, well, I owe your master 100 measures of wheat. He says, okay, well, let's just tear that one up, and you write down, we'll write down 80. So the master now, when he gets a hold of this, he's really left with no choice because he doesn't know exactly what these people owe him. He's got somebody else taking care of it. And so he commends this guy for being very shrewd. He's not commending what he's doing. Understand, Jesus is not saying that you and I should start acting that way, okay? Cheating our bosses. But what he's commending him for is the first thing I want you to see here, and that's this. The servant is praised for ensuring his future. See, this servant is not just thinking about now, he's thinking about the future. You say, hey, how does him doing this affect his future? He said, well, notice something now. You've got a guy that owes this guy 100 measures of oil. He only owes him 50 now. You've got another guy who owes the master 100 measures of wheat. He only owes him 80 now. Who do you think is their new buddy? This steward. Because this steward now has reduced their what? Debt load. And so when this steward gets fired, who's going to take care of the steward? Those folks who used to owe this guy more money are going to say, hey, you know what? You just saved me a lot of money, buddy. Come, I'll take care of you. See, that's why the master is commending him, because this guy has ensured his future. Hey, can I be honest with you? When we think about the issue of contentment, how I deal with the issue of contentment is that I need to have a focus that's not just focused on what I want now. I need to have a heart for looking at what the future holds. And so then that's reflected in things like saving, laying money aside, whether it's in your mattress or taking it to the bank. These days with the interest rates where they are, you might as well put it in your mattress. But no, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Okay. But he's praised for ensuring his future. What happens with the contentment issue is that we get so discontent, what do? We think about now, now, now. And so we what? We spend, spend, spend. And guess what? We don't have anything. But this guy was thinking in terms of later on, and so he's commended for that. He's commended for that. He's commended for ensuring his future. And so Jesus then says, look, there are three lessons that you can bring out of this guy's life, even though he did what was wrong. Because I want you to say, are you sure he did what was wrong? Notice, I want you to notice how Jesus describes it. Look with me at what he says, verse 9. Verse 8. So the master commended the unjust steward. So again, he's still called what? The unjust steward, because he had dealt shrewdly. And notice what he says. The sons of the world, that is the unsaved, are more shrewd in their generation than who? The sons of light, that is believers. So he's not necessarily commending what he's doing. He's saying, but there's some lessons there. So besides the fact that he's praised for ensuring his future, there's three things I want you to notice on top of that. First of all, Jesus says to them that we are to use money for our relationships. Notice what he says. Verse 9. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, so that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. What's he saying here? Jesus is saying to us that when it comes to your finances, when it comes to your money, what needs to be on the forefront of your mind to ensure your future is that you need to be thinking in terms of relationship rather than yourself. Because I'll be honest with you, when you look at the issue of contentment, who's the focus on when we talk about the issue of contentment? Yourself. And when you're not content, it's who? You who are not content. And so when you focus your money on your contentment, which again, remember what I said, you're not going to find contentment in this world. Your money is being focused on what you want. But what he's saying here is learn the lesson from this guy. Put your money in relationships so that if you fail, so that when you have a problem, somebody will what? Take care of you. Somebody will be there for you because why? You were there for them. You helped them out when they were in a pinch and what? Now, as you're going through difficult times, what? They'll help you out. I'll be honest with you. I think that's so important for a church to grasp is that whole point that, again, you're a steward of the money that God has given you. But your finances are not just for you to spend on you, yourself, you know, the big three, me, myself, and I. It's to be spent for God's purposes in your home. And so you build, use it for relationships. What are some primary relationships in your life? Let me give you the first one, your family. Remember, I gave you that illustration last week that you could have that hobby, and it's your money, quote, your money. Remember, we talked about that last week. No, it's not your money. It's God's money who's letting you use it for the moment. And you could say, well, I've got my hobby. That might be anything from hunting to quilting to whatever. And you're spending your money on that at the expense of your family. And then you wonder when you get older why the kids aren't there anymore. You see the point? Use your money for your relationship. Now, I'm not talking about buying friends. Let me just stop for a moment. That's not what I'm talking about. Somebody would say, George is talking about we need to go buy friends. No, I'm not talking about that. But your generosity in being there for others will help you out later. That's what Jesus is saying here. That's what Jesus is saying here. So we're to use our money for our relationships. The other point he's saying is what you see here from the illustration of this guy, and this helps you with the issue of contentment, And that's this. Future rewards are based on current stewardship. Notice verse 10. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in what is much. Verse 11. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in unrighteous mammon, that is money, who will commit to your trust the true riches? That's the things of heaven. And if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? What's Jesus saying here? Learn the lesson here from this guy. The guy was thinking in terms of the future rather than now. He was learning contentment now. He was thinking in terms of my future. And he says, look, if you don't understand that you are responsible for what you have and how you handle what you have now is going to be reflected later on in what you are given later, then you're missing it. How you handle now what you're given now will be reflected later in what you are given later. You say, is that biblical, George? You better believe it is. All you got to do, a great parallel passage is 1 Corinthians chapter 3. You don't need to turn there. It talks about what we lay up in heaven. And we lay up in heaven what? Wood, hay, stubble, or gold, silver, precious stones for the future. And that in that day of judgment, and you and I will be judged. It won't be a judgment unto hell, because we're saved if you know Jesus Christ as your Savior. But it will be a judgment of what you did with what He gave you here and what you laid up in heaven. And if you laid up wood, hay, stubble, guess what happens when it passes through the fire? Might as well have a weenie roast, because it burns up. But when you pass gold, silver, and precious stones through the fire, what happens to those things? They're refined. And then Paul says this, there are some, though, that they'll have everything burned up, but all they'll have is their salvation. See, your future rewards are based upon how you handle what God gives you now. See, and that strikes right at the heart of contentment, doesn't it? Because if I'm caught in this contentment issue, if I'm caught in the contentment problem, if I'm caught in, I'm not satisfied with the computer I got right now. You know, there's a computer on the market that goes a half a second faster than what I've got right now. And so I start sitting at the desk and I start thinking, boy, if I could save a half a second every day, think of how much more stuff I could do. Lori, that's a time-saving computer. She's not convinced. You're laughing, but isn't that how we are? You know, when I start thinking about that my future in heaven is affected by now, I learn contentment. I learn contentment. I learn it. I'll be honest. What am I saying? Everybody should dress the classic look. Forget all the styles. No, I'm just kidding. So we should notice that our future rewards are based on our current situation. Let me give you a story here, what I'm talking about. A store owner placed a sign in the window that said, "Boy Wanted." So young John Simmons, though he was lazy, saw this as an opportunity and applied. He was quickly hired by elderly Mr. Peters. The pace was leisurely, so he enjoyed the job. Toward the middle of the afternoon, he was sent up to the attic of the store. A place was pretty dingy, filled with cobwebs and infested with a lot of mice. He said, "You'll find in the back of the attic a long, deep box there," explained Mr. Peters. "Please sort out all the contents and see what should be saved and what should be thrown out." John was disappointed. It was a large container. There seemed to be nothing in it but old junk. Just junk. So after a few minutes, he went back down to the ground floor, asked the proprietor what he could do. And the proprietor said to him, "Hey, did you finish the job I sent you for up there?" And he replied, "No, sir, it was dark, it was cold, I'm not into mice, and I don't think it was even worth my doing the job." So at closing time, he paid the boy and told him, "That's it, I don't need you anymore." The next day, he put a new sign up, "Boy Wanted," as usual. This time, a young fellow by the name of Crawford Hill was the next to be employed. So when it was time, he asked the young man to go up to the same box in the attic and to tidy up that box. When he was asked to tidy up the same box, Crawford spent several hours separating usable nails and screws from things that should be discarded. Suddenly, he raced down the stairs, all excited. "At the bottom, I found this," he told Mr. Peters, and he held up a $20 bill. At last, the store owner had discovered a conscientious young boy whom he could entrust his business with in the future. Years later, Mr. Peters said this, "This young man, who is now my successor, found his fortune in a junk box." Then correcting himself, he said, "No, he actually found it in his mother's Bible because he heeded the verse that she made him memorize. He that is faithful in what is least is faithful also in what is much." See, our future rewards are tied to our current stewardship. So be content. Be content. Trust in God. The other thing Jesus then says is this, and this really gets right to the heart of the issue of contentment. And he says this, "A choice has to be made concerning our service." Notice what he finally says in this section. He says, "No servant can serve two masters, either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." See, a choice has to be made. Jesus says you can't have it both ways. You can't have the stuff of this earth and have me. And I'll be honest with you, when you're caught in the trap of discontentment, and I've been there, I have been in that trap where, you know, your body just aches because you want something more out of life, and you focus your attentions on that, and it doesn't bring the satisfaction that you think it will bring. I'll be honest with you, when you're caught in that trap, your focus isn't on God, it's on you. You. I'll be honest with you, there's no happiness, there's no contentment, no fulfillment, only emptiness, more emptiness, more emptiness. Because I'll be honest with you, what you're trying to do is you're trying to fill the emptiness in your life that only God can fill, but you're trying to fill it with the junk of this world. The junk of this world. The junk of this world. You know, it's interesting. I still have the Legos. Some of you parents know what Legos are. I still have the Legos from when I was a kid. And so I've been slowly passing them on to my kids so that Lori can vacuum them up with a vacuum, okay? And I was thinking about those because my kids are really, my boys especially, are really into the Legos. I mean, they live, breathe, and eat Legos. I mean, they create stuff. And Sawyer shows me this new whatever and says, "Dad, would you have thought of something like this?" And I said, "No, Sawyer, no, I wouldn't have, you know." And so I was thinking about that and I thought, you know, they're at that age when I really loved my Legos. And I thought, how long was I really into them? And I thought, only 1 or 2 years. And then they got put in a box in an attic. And a few years ago, I took them down from the attic and put them in my attic. And gradually, I've been letting them play with them. And I'll be honest with you, it didn't bring contentment in my life as a child. Because after Legos, it was G.I. Joe. With his rocket-propelled grenade gun on the back of a Jeep. And I wanted that. And it's somewhere in some landfill in South Carolina right now. Being squashed by a compactor, I'm sure, or a playground is being built over it or something. See, we try to find contentment in the stuff of this world, but you've got to make a decision. You can't serve both. If you try to find contentment in the stuff of this world, you're not going to find it. You can't serve both. You can't. So let me give you three thoughts to conclude what we're saying here. And these are two of them are questions, and so you're going to have to ask yourself the big question. Number one, are you content with what you have? Are you content with what you have? Ask yourself that question. If there was nothing more, are you content with what you have? And if you were honest with yourself, you would say no. If you're being spiritual, you'll say, oh yes, I'm fine. But let's not be hypocritical. Let's be real. Because no sooner than we leave here, if it was a hot day, you'd get in your vehicle and you'd say, boy, that air conditioner's not working well. Boy, did you notice that new dress somebody's wearing over there, that style? I think I would look better. Be honest with me, that's what you think. Isn't that true? We're being real here. Boy, did you see that nice truck he showed up in? Are you content with what you have? You got to ask, and be real, be brutally honest, and ask God, are you content with what you have? And if we were honest with ourselves, we would finally say, no, I'm not content. Ben's breakfast is coming up soon. We're going to have that site in, and guys are going to show up with their guns, and you got your gun, you've used it, it's been faithful, it's given you many a deer. Then somebody shows up with a new one. And you're looking and you're saying, I don't know that I can bring down a deer anymore with the one I got. And you go home and you tell your wife, I need to go to Grice's. And she says, no, you don't. Ask yourself, are you content? This is real. I mean, when you think about the issues that we have with finances and the difficulties that we struggle with, the contentment is at the heart of the issue. And you got to ask yourself that question. Are you content? Then that brings up the next question. Are you enslaved to money? Remember what Jesus said, you can't serve both. And some of you are doing that. You're enslaved to money and you don't even know that. Oh, you've made the excuses. You said, well, I'm doing this for my family. I'm ensuring their future. So you're working like a dog. But it's not for the family. It's for the stuff. Reminds me of about 5-6 years ago, I saw an ad, an article in USA Today about a Major League Baseball player. And the reporter was asking him about his relationship with his daughter, and because she had been complaining to the press about how he doesn't have any time for them. And his response was, "I don't know what the brat's problem is. I just bought her a Mercedes." See, there's a man who's enslaved to money. See, because he doesn't see that the issue isn't buying her stuff. The issue is she wants him. Are you enslaved to money? You know, we have to be honest with ourselves. We all are, aren't we? And it's tied to that issue of contentment. Tied to that issue of contentment. Finally, handle your money in light of eternity. Think beyond now. Think to the future. Think beyond now. Think to the future. Handle your money in light of eternity, because how you handle what you have now will be reflected in what is given to you later. Just so you understand what Jesus is saying when he says, "You cannot serve me and serve mammon." Let me explain to you. The Bible is very clear in how we serve God with our money. Can I tell you the first one is? Take care of your family. What does the Bible say? That he who does not take care of his family is worse than an infidel. He's worse than an unbeliever who's going to hell. That's one of the responsibilities that God gives us, is to, what? Take care of our family. One of the other responsibilities, are actually three, that God gives us, is to take care of those who are around us, our friends, our neighbors, our relatives, to be there for them in their times of need. And then the final responsibility is to give to the kingdom. To have the money there to be available for the use of the kingdom of God. See, handle your money in light of eternity. Who are you serving? Who are you serving? A lot to think about. Let's pray.